God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to these stations to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Church Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry to introduce our broadcast.
Well, Brother Hutchings, the federal government is trying out some legislation in some states that could be very dangerous to those who have children or grandchildren in the government schools. And today, Dr. Dennis Cuddy will be our guest. He'll bring us up to date on what's happening with mental health legislation that he brought to our attention several months ago. Dr. Cuddy is a historian and political analyst. He received a Ph.D. from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and served as a senior associate in the U.S. Department of Education. He's well qualified to speak on this subject. He also has a new book, which contains much of the information he'll be sharing today, and you can get a copy through this ministry. More on that later. Here now is Brother Hutchings and his guest, Dr. Dennis Cuddy.
Thank you, Jerry. Dr. Cuddy, it's good to have you on the program today, and perhaps you would begin by giving us some chronology as to how this legislation came about and what it entails.
Thanks for having me, Brother Hutchings. This particular chronology will pick up from the first booklet that was parts 1 through 4 of a series on mental health, education, and social control. And so this new book that's just come out is a companion to that one, and it also is about the same subject. The title is Mental Health Screening, How It Will Affect Your Children, and the booklet was titled National Mental Health Program. But what I try to do is to include not only mental health issues, but education and social control and how they all fit together. And so what happened was the impetus for the last book, and of course this one as well, was that the current president, George W. Bush, had established a new Freedom Commission on Mental Health, and it was to come up with various recommendations, was to recommend that everyone, primarily children at first, would have mental health screenings to see if there were certain problems or disabilities. The idea would be to catch these problems first and early on so that some treatment could be given to them. And of course, you and I and everybody else who's concerned as Christians are interested in seeing to it that there's good mental health in the country. And there are obviously people, including children, with severe mental health problems. And there's no opposition really to helping those individuals. But this became a rather sweeping concern for a couple of reasons. First off, what happened was the federal government had funded a study by the National Science Foundation, the National Institute on Mental Health, for about $1.2 million. And in that study, there was a curious outcome, and this was by the experts in this field at Johns Hopkins University and Stanford and other places. And what they said, I won't read the whole thing, but just this one term, for example, is, quote, social conservatives and dogmatism could be associated with mental illness. Now, that raised a number of eyebrows, not only because of the inclusion of social conservatism, but a dogmatism that could mean people with dogmatic or fundamentalist religious beliefs, and they were associating that with some sort of mental illness. I had a personal background in this because about 25 years ago in the state where I'm located, they developed a state mental health plan, and a state health plan, actually, that had religion linked with mental illness and mental retardation. So there's always been this concern, and of course I, having taught history, knew from years ago that the beginning of the World Health Organization, the person in charge of that was a Dr. Brock Chisholm, who actually stated in a journal article in the journal Psychiatry back in February of 1946 that the real problem for youngsters was that their parents and preachers and others like that tried to instill the concept of right and wrong in their children. He said, that was horrible. That was bad. We have to do away with this. So that was one of the problems. Now, usually if there's a problem with a federal legislation or some sort of federal initiative, let's say back when I was with the U.S. Department of Education in the 80s as a senior associate there during most of the Reagan years, let's say something controversial came up like comprehensive sex education to be funded and taught in all the public schools. Well, it was very easy for somebody, a senator who was a conservative, to introduce legislation saying, well, you have to have parental consent for this to happen. Well, the curious thing was when a representative in the House of Representatives in Congress, Ron Paul, introduced that type of legislation, saying, oh, okay, if you're going to have this, you ought to have parental consent, he was defeated, which was very, very curious, because usually the Congress just, you know, by 99% or something goes along with this. So that raised a lot of questions on the part of many people as to whether there was some sort of agenda going on here. And as I said, what I try to do is show that this isn't just a mental health issue, but it involves education, what's being taught in the schools, as well as a social control mechanism. And before I continue, let me give a little endorsement of Southwest Radio Church for this reason, and you'll see how it's related. I talked and have talked for many years to many leading people. These are leading religious leaders who will be on television. They have huge ministries and followings. And I've tried to convince them of this, but you won't hear it from them. What you will hear it from is Brother Hutchings and Southwest Radio Church, who are informing the people, and Bible Belt Publishing, publishing such books as this, which do inform the people about what our problems are. I'll give you an example. Ever since the 60s, we were very disheartened when prayer was taken out of the schools and no more Bible reading. And ever since then, what's happened is people have just moaned and groaned at the national level, and they've sent out fundraising letters, and they say, oh, my goodness, you know, we've got to get a constitutional amendment to reverse this, and, oh, look at the runaway courts, and so forth and so on. And there are runaway courts. They really are judicially active courts, not really sticking to the basic Constitution. But what the leading people won't tell you, the leading religious leaders, but you will hear it on Southwest Radio Church, is that problem and many, many other problems have been easily solvable, but for some reason they don't talk about it. And it's very easy under Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution. There's a provision to limit the appellate jurisdiction of the federal courts. Senator Dom Daschle, when he was head of the U.S. Senate for the Democrats, he used to do that fairly often. If it was a farm subsidy or something concerning his state, he would do that. But for some reason, for four decades, conservatives and religious people, whether it's a school prayer issue or abortion, whatever it is, we just don't do that for some reason, even though we've had a majority in the U.S. House and U.S. Senate now for a number of years. Secondly, this is really about values. And what happened after school prayer and Bible reading was kicked out of the public school, what happened was the government said, well, separation of church and state, and we have to remain neutral in these areas. The problem is they still taught values in the schools. And so if God, the God of the Bible, which people are teaching their children at home, God says these are right things and these are the wrong things to do, if God is no longer the moral authority for teaching youngsters what's right and wrong in school, then there's a different moral authority. And as it turned out, it was the autonomous moral decision-making student through situation ethics. In other words, you might have a class on responsible behavior or honesty or whatever, but the teacher will never tell the student, you know, I'm telling you to do this because it's morally right, or don't do that because it's morally wrong. What they're told is to make up their own mind as to what's right and wrong for them based on the situation, situation ethics. And so a student may raise his hand and say, is it to never right to be dishonest, or something like that. The point being, the student is left to make up his or her own mind about what's right and wrong, so they are the new moral authority. Well, that's not neutrality. That's not government neutrality. If the parents are saying at home, the God of the Bible says these things are right and wrong, but the schools are saying there's a different moral authority for making these decisions, then that's not moral authority. That's discrimination against us, and we should have been pointing that out, and it has been on Southwest Radio Church for many, many years, but the leading people in the nation won't do it. That's why it's important for people listening to this program to get these books like this one, Mental Health Screening, and the one before that, the National Mental Health Program, which is the companion to this, so that you will find out what's going on. And one of the key points is in this whole debate, this whole issue, is Representative Ron Paul, to try and correct this situation, has introduced the U.S. House of Representatives, they call it H.R., House Rules, 181 is the name of the legislation, the number of the legislation. It's called the Parental Consent Act of 2005 is the name of it. And what that is to do is to remedy the possibility in previous legislation that would allow mental health screenings of children without parental consent. Now, here's the catch, and here's why it's important to listen to Southwest Radio Church and to buy these books. What you will find out is that when these bureaucrats and others start to see a great public outcry against something, they then appear to back off and say, oh, yes, we understand your concern. So if you were to look at the New Freedom Commission on Mental Health today, what you will find out is from their own publications, their own newsletters and press releases is, oh, yes, we never intended for the parents to not give their consent. We are all for parental consent. And so that word goes filtering out through the Associated Press or New York Times, and all of the parents are supposed to say, oh, well, what a relief, no more problem. What you have to do, and what I've been able to do as a person who's been involved with these people, the bureaucracy, having worked in the Department of Education and had some familiarity and dealings with the Health and Human Services in Washington, as well as the Justice Department, is these people can be rather sneaky. And to just put it bluntly, what they've done is they've come up with two definitions of parental consent. What they are for, and what you need to be aware of, is that there is an opt-out and an opt-in. What they're pushing is a definition of parental consent being opt-out. And there's a serious problem with that, and I'll explain it briefly. What they would do is say, okay, if you don't want your child to be mentally screened for mental health, you tell us about it. Now, there's all kinds of problems with that. Number one, if they send a letter home, what if the mail loses it? If they give it to your son or daughter and they forget to give it to you, then how are you to know there's a screening to which you would object? And so forth and so on. You can see all the possible pitfalls. What we need to do is have an opt-in provision. And what that means, unless they, the bureaucracy in your local school, the principal, superintendent, whoever, actually has in their hands a written letter of informed consent signed by you saying, yes, you may screen my child, then they can't do it. That's entirely different. But what they're pushing is the other, the opt-out, because they know there are more loopholes in that, there are more potentialities, that you will not become aware of it in the first place, that there's a screening, and that you will not take the time or be interested or whatever to actually write a letter saying, no, I do not want my child to have this mental health screening. And so that's another reason it's good to be informed on these issues. And so now, in terms of what happened was, I already introduced this by saying the New Freedom Commission on Mental Health was established by President Bush several years ago, and it's really progressing at a rather fast pace. There are about 27 sites in the country already that are introducing some form of this. All 50 states, if you look at your own state, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, wherever, every one of them will say they are in some form or another participating in this initiative. They may be starting a little slow, but the ultimate goal is to have everybody with a mental health screening. The pharmaceutical industries are really pushing this. They see Medicaid payments as putting forth a tremendous amount of money for these screenings. Even if you don't find anything wrong, the screening itself will get a good deal of money. Plus, they've developed new, rather strong antidepressant drugs. Some of them are rather dangerous, actually, that they want to get on the market and to have a large population to be able to take them. And so what's happened is a number of people, myself, another person is Dr. Karen Ephraim, up in the north central plains of the country, who have asked a rather important series of questions. She said, look, if you're going to have this, if the New Freedom Commission is going to recommend this, what happens if a youngster fails this screening? Or what are the criteria for the screening? What if the parents don't approve of the screening? A lot of these questions have to be asked by your local school system. If they're going to get involved in this, or if your local state health and human service agency is going to go along with this, you need to have them answer all of these questions, because there are consequences for you. In some states, parents have actually been threatened that if you don't put your child on Ritalin or some other drug like that, you might have a knock on the door from child services saying, you know, this is emotional neglect or whatever your state legislation says you can be guilty of. The next thing is, there's a matter of privacy in all this. Once they have this screening, let's say somebody somewhere, for whatever reason, is screening your child, and they say, well, you know, your child might have a mental health problem. Well, what you have is HHS, Health and Human Services at the national level, about a year ago, in November 15th of 2004, has developed this plan for what they call, quote, interoperable electronic health records. Now, that's a fancy name for people can access this stuff, you know, other health agencies, maybe insurance companies, whatever. So it's not as though this is really, really private information. There will be people who have access to this. As I said in this book that has just come out, Mental Health Screening, and the previous booklet, there's an educational angle to all of this. And therefore, I would include John Dewey, the father of progressive education, who said we're going to have socialism. That's what the schools were going to do. And many of your teachers, if you ask them, are you a progressive educator? They'll say, oh, yes, yes, I'm one of these progressive educators. Now, they don't know what they're talking about. But the point is that philosophy is rather pervasive. And Dewey saw the schools as a means of, quote, behavioral conditioning. In other words, he wanted to condition youngsters, and the year after he co-authored the first Humanist Manifesto in 1933, in 1934 he authored a book called A Common Faith. And what he said there, and remember that word dogmatic that I mentioned before by that recent federal finding, he said people with dogmatic religious beliefs will have to surrender. Because what we have to have is a common faith. Only if we have a faith to which we can all agree will we there have peace and no more wars, because people will not be angry with each other in disagreement. We'll all have common philosophies or whatever you call it, religious beliefs that we agree in. So he was advocating and using the schools to pursue this means. I actually have quotes in other books that have been published there. Through an arm of Southwest Radio Church, a book about the NEA grab for power, in which I include a quote from back in the early 1900s where Dewey says that. He says, we're about a religious activity in the public schools. And so what happened was the Dewey people in the 1950s gained control of Columbia Teachers College, from which a lot of the superintendents and principals around the nation have come, all over the nation. And what they did is get that philosophy down to the classroom level by, say, the early 1960s. And so they were able to switch from the cognitive domain, that's your basics, reading, writing, math, to what's called the affective domain. That's like affection, feelings, relationships. And so what you have ever since the 60s, you'll find people not saying, what do you think about this, but how do you feel about this? And the reason that's important is that feelings are more easily manipulated. A child's feelings can be used to manipulate the change in their values. You can bring peer pressure to them, and so on. And so the school switched their emphasis, and that's the very time that you started to have grade inflation and social promotions, and SATs started going down, the scores, and so forth. So anyway, that's part of the educational aspect of this. It's not just a mental health project here, but the book includes information about education and social control as well. And as I indicated, what you have is Representative Ron Paul introducing the Parental Consent Act of 2005, that's H.R. 181, to try and change that. And so what I did was I include also things about social control, because that's what this is about, they're using mental health and education to bring about the social control of people. And so I'll put references to the book 1984, in which they said we're going to quicken the tempo of human life, which they've done. I include references chronologically from 1968. Albert Ellis, big-time humanist, authored a book, The Case Against Religion, where he said religion harms your mental health. But I don't just do historical stuff. The chronology sort of comes up to today. Recently, Bill Maher, M-A-H-E-R, is on television rather frequently now, has his own show. He said on television that religion is a neurological disorder. Also, now you say, well, you know, that's somebody's opinion. Okay, so he's a Hollywood TV person, and he has an opinion. I don't just leave it at that, though. I show how the authorities, not just National Science Foundation, not just the National Institute of Mental Health, is talking about dogmatic beliefs and social conservatism as perhaps having a mental health problem. But literally, the Bible that these people use is titled The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. That's what they will refer to see what is a mental disorder. And one of the quotes is this, quote, oppositional deficit disorder, fancy term. What's included under that? What they include are things like arguing and refusing to obey. Well, you can see how that would include, you know, in about 90% of the population. Ask yourself, have you ever argued with anybody? Have you ever refused to obey an order? Let's say it was an immoral order to do something or something illegal or whatever. So what they've done is broaden the definition way, way out. So it's very, very broad, so almost anything can be considered a mental disorder. Also, I mentioned the pharmaceutical industry. You got to be really, really careful of that. Students, for example, at Columbine, one of the killers, I believe, was on Luvox, Prozac, and other things. But if you look at Luvox, which one of those Columbine killers said, if you look at the actual box, it'll say, what is a frequent, not just a reaction, you know, not just, you see these TV ads that say rare side effects. This is under frequent reaction. It says manic or psychotic reaction to taking Luvox. And here's one of these youngsters at Columbine who was on that. Same thing, there's a long-term selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. They're really antidepressants. Many of them have been linked to suicides.
Thank you, Dr. Cuddy, for being with us. I think we have to remember that the educational systems of our country are mainly now under the control of those who profess no belief in God or who promote the evolutionary theory of how we got here. And if this is not tempered in some way, this new legislation, if your child was opposed to world government, they could be considered paranoid. Or if your child believes that if they should die, they will go to heaven, they could be judged to be schizophrenic with hallucinatory thoughts about life after death. So there are many dangers in this new legislation. But as Dr. Cuddy brought out, it's social control. It is control for political purposes using the mental health issue to have obtained this and eventually world government. So I certainly would encourage you to get Dr. Cuddy's book. Our announcer will also tell you how you might get extra copies to give to others. And thank you, Dr. Cuddy, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Friends, if you didn't get Dr. Cuddy's new book and the booklet when they were offered earlier, don't miss them now. The book is entitled Mental Health Screening: How Will It Affect Your Children? The 112-page book is offered for a gift of $10 for one copy, $15 for two, or get three copies for a contribution of $25. And if you don't have the 41-page booklet, National Mental Health Program, Creating Standards for the New World Order, ask for a complimentary copy when you order the book. There are three ways to place your order: telephone, mail, or the internet. To order by phone, call 1-800-652-1144. If you prefer the mail, address your request to Southwest Radio Church Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The internet address is swrc.com. Call, write, or go online today to get both the book and the booklet. Again, the book is available for an offering of $10 for one copy, $15 for two, or three in appreciation of your $25 gift. And, of course, be sure to ask for a complimentary copy of the booklet, National Mental Health Program. Be sure to look for this week's internet specials. We're offering two books and a video. The video, just in time for Halloween, is Harry Potter, Witchcraft Repackaged. It's a 60-minute VHS from Jeremiah Films. The books are Unveiling Mysteries of the Bible by Grant Jeffrey and Winning the War Against Radical Islam by Dr. Robert Morey. Special gift amounts are posted on the internet. Stay tuned for a Bible in the News report on most of these stations. Join us tomorrow for another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Church Ministries. This is Jerry Giltner, announcer for the Watchman on the Wall broadcast. I'll be bringing you today's Bible in the News report. Connecticut has joined Vermont in allowing same-sex couples to be married. The state allowed the practice beginning on Saturday, October 1, 2005. Since October 1 was on a Saturday, only a few town clerks' offices were open to accommodate gays and lesbians who wanted to take advantage of the new law on its first day. And some did exchange vows. We're quoting from USAtoday.com, the story posted on the internet October 3rd, 2005. Quote, After receiving their civil union license Saturday, Lydia Agramonte and Maria Gomez had all the same rights as a married couple in Connecticut, but they couldn't find words to describe their union. The hardest is this. What do you call yourself? Civilized? Said Agramonte, 47, a social worker from New Britain. The women were the first in line at Hartford City Hall as a new law allowing same-sex civil unions took effect. City Hall in Hartford, Stamford, New Haven, and a half-dozen small towns held special weekend hours to issue certificates to couples who said they waited for years to be legally recognized. Connecticut became the first state to legalize civil unions without being forced by the courts after lawmakers passed a law endorsing the unions in April. Massachusetts allows gay marriages, and Vermont recognizes civil unions because of lawsuits. The law affords all the legal rights of marriage, such as spousal health care benefits, to same-sex couples, but defines marriage as between a man and a woman. Heterosexual couples cannot get civil unions. The license application is identical to the one for marriage, except bride and groom are replaced with Party 1 and Party 2. The 2000 U.S. Census found about 7,400 same-sex couples in Connecticut, but no one was tracking how many applied for licenses Saturday. The day passed with few reports of protest, except for a rally at the Capitol sponsored by the Family Institute of Connecticut. It drew about 50 people. October 1 is a tragic day because it's the first day a law goes into effect that states a legislative belief that children don't need both a mom and a dad, said Peter Wolfgang, the director of public policy for the Institute, close quotes. Fox News ran a story on September 30th that said Stamford Mayor Daniel Malloy, who is running for governor, would officiate at one of the civil unions, but it's not known as this story is written if he actually did. The Bible is clear in its teachings about both homosexuality and marriage. Homosexuality is called an abomination. We read, "Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination." That's Leviticus 18:22. And in the book of Genesis, "Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Genesis 3:24. You've just heard another Bible in the News report, a presentation of Southwest Radio Church Ministries. If you'd like a complimentary copy of the script for this Bible in the News article, call 1-800-652-1144. Or you may write for it. The mailing address is Southwest Radio Church Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Be sure to join us for the next broadcast of the Southwest Radio Church Ministries Watchman on the Wall program when once again we'll bring you another Bible in the News report.